You're listening to the Study Legal English podcast, the world's first legal English podcast, helping lawyers and law students become fluent in legal English. Hello and welcome to episode 32 of the Study Legal English podcast. I am your host, Louise, and today we are talking about precedent. In the last episode, we looked at the origins of common law. We learnt about the differences between common law and civil law systems, and we looked at some key legal English vocabulary. In today's episode, we look at the doctrine of judicial precedent and how it works. In the next episode, we'll be looking at a very distinct feature of the English legal system, and that is equity. So please send in your questions about this to info@studylegalenglish.com. So let's get started. What is precedent? Well, as a general overview, the doctrine of judicial precedent is concerned with the decisions judges make in common law jurisdictions. The doctrine deals with how judges can make case law. That means how judges can make law or set rules through their decisions. It also deals with when judges should or must follow previous decisions and apply this case law, and when they can avoid doing so. Just to note, you may be confused with the words precedent, case law, common law, but you don't need to be. These are used synonymously. The main difference, if any, is that common law refers to a body of law made through the courts and is therefore used in a more general sense, whereas precedent and case law can refer to a single rule set in one particular case, as well as more than one rule if we say the plural precedents and case law is not pluralized. Another point to make is that I am using judge as a general word to refer to a person who hears a legal case. In England and Wales, judges may be called something else depending on the court they sit in. For example, those in the Supreme Court are known as justices, but this will be covered in a future podcast episode when we move on to talk specifically about the courts. So let's look at precedent in more detail. At the very heart of the doctrine of precedent is stare decisis. Stare decisis is a Latin phrase meaning let the decision stand. It means that once a decision has been made by a judge, this decision should be followed in similar cases by other judges. There are two main types of precedent. These are binding precedent and persuasive precedent. A binding precedent refers to a decision made by a judge which must be applied in a later case, subject to certain rules. We say that this decision is binding on or upon other judges, or that other judges are bound by this precedent. On the other hand, a persuasive precedent doesn't fulfill the criteria for being a binding precedent. Therefore, it is not binding, meaning it does not need to be followed. However, it is still very influential. It can be followed, but it is not necessary for the courts to do so. So, what is the criteria for binding precedent? For a precedent to be binding and to operate, there are three essential elements. Firstly, the precedent relied on must come from a case with the same or sufficiently similar legally relevant or material facts to the current case before the courts. Basically, the case before the courts must be very similar, in the material facts to the case which is being relied on. Legally relevant or material facts refer to facts which are significant and relevant to the case. For example, let's consider the following. A case involves a man with brown hair who drove his car whilst drunk, singing loudly along to his favourite David Bowie CD. What are the legally relevant facts here? The relevant facts here are that a person was driving a car drunk. It doesn't matter that he had brown hair. It also doesn't matter that he was singing along to a David Bowie CD. Therefore, if another case arises where a man with blonde hair driving his car drunk whilst listening to Tchaikovsky, of course, in this case, the precedent set by the David Bowie man case would still apply. Secondly, the second criteria for binding precedent is that the precedent relied on must have come from the ratio decidendi of a judgment and not merely the obiter dicta. What do those words mean? Some very crazy Latin phrases in legal English that we often come across. Well, ratio decidendi is a Latin phrase meaning the rationale for the decision, and we often simply say the ratio. It refers to the most important part of the judgment, which makes up the legal reasoning for the decision. It must be distinguished from the obiter dictum, which is another phrase meaning by the way. Obiter can include a judge thinking about what he would have done if the facts had been different, or making a passing comment which is not crucial to the decision. It could also be something said by a dissenting judge, and a dissenting judge means that in cases with more than two judges, it's the judge who disagrees with the final decision. The third and final element of binding precedent is that the precedent relied on must have come from a case which was heard in a court of the same or higher level than the current case before the courts. It's important here to know that in England and Wales, there is a court hierarchy with inferior courts at the bottom and superior courts above. We will look at this in more detail in a moment. Let's consider now the elements of persuasive precedent. Firstly, the persuasive precedent must come from a case with different material or legally relevant facts to the current case. Therefore, the cases are very different and you can't apply the rule to the current case. Or, a second option would be that the decision referred to may have come from an inferior court or even a court with jurisdiction outside of England and Wales, for example, the Judicial Committee of the Privy Council, which we'll discuss a bit later. Another option for persuasive precedent is that the points referred to may have come from the obiter, as I mentioned, the obiter dicta, and not the ratio decidendi, or the legal reasoning. Therefore, these comments made in the obiter are helpful. They are persuasive, but they're not binding. Great. So it's quite a lot to take in, but hopefully you've understood something about binding and persuasive precedent. So let's move now on to the court hierarchy. At the bottom of this hierarchy, we have the lower or inferior courts, such as the magistrates' courts and the county courts. Above this, all of the courts are known as superior or senior courts. We have the Crown Court, the High Court, the Divisional Courts. Then, on the level above this, is the Court of Appeal. The highest UK-based court is the Supreme Court, and this used to be part of the function of the House of Lords. Yet above this, at least for now, we have the European Court of Justice and the European Court of Human Rights. So let's discuss who can and who can't set precedent. We'll start at the bottom of the hierarchy and move up. So first of all, at the bottom of the hierarchy, we have the lower or inferior courts. These are the family court and county court, which decide civil cases, and magistrates' courts, which decide criminal matters. Can these courts set precedent? No. The inferior or lower courts do not make precedent. They do not make case law. And what about following precedent? Yes, the inferior courts are bound by precedent set by higher courts. Next, we have all the superior or senior courts. That is the Crown Court, the High Court of Justice, the Court of Appeal, the Supreme Court, and of course, above these, the Court of Justice of the European Union. And what about the Crown Court? Well, the Crown Court deals with criminal matters and is strongly persuaded by its own decisions to ensure certainty in criminal law. It doesn't normally set precedent except where there is a High Court judge sitting in the Crown Court. On the other hand, of course, the Crown Court must follow precedent set in higher courts. So let's consider the High Court. Can the High Court set precedent? Yes. Decisions made in cases heard by single judges here bind all lower courts, but they're only persuasive on other High Court judges at the same level and higher courts. What about the divisions of the High Court? For example, the Queen's Bench Division, the Chancery Division, and Family Division, which hear appellate cases with two or more judges. Do they set precedent? Yes. The decisions here bind all lower courts and even the High Court itself, with some exceptions. These decisions are only persuasive for higher courts. Next, moving up the hierarchy, we get to the Court of Appeal. Can the Court of Appeal set precedent? Yes, of course. Whilst Court of Appeal decisions are only persuasive for the Supreme Court, its decisions are binding on the lower courts. The Court of Appeal normally also binds itself, with some exceptions. And these exceptions are quite wide in criminal cases, where the liberty of the individual is at stake. And what about following precedent? The Court of Appeal must follow precedent which is set by the higher court, which is the Supreme Court. Next, at the top of the hierarchy, we get to the Supreme Court. Does the Supreme Court set precedent? You bet, of course. The Supreme Court of the United Kingdom binds all lower courts and generally itself, except where it appears right to not follow. Its predecessor, the House of Lords, was bound absolutely by itself, and the only way to avoid binding precedent at this level was for Parliament to legislate to change the law. But in 1966, this changed when the House of Lords issued the practice statement allowing departures from precedent in order to achieve justice. The law lords recognised that they were not infallible. Even they were indeed capable of making mistakes. With that said, at this level, the justices are extremely reluctant to depart, and since 1966, there have been less than 50 departures at this level. It's because they want to ensure the consistency in case law. Next up, we have the Court of Justice of the European Union, which binds all UK courts on all matters related to European law. This court does not bind itself, although it is very likely to follow previous decisions on similar matters, and it's not bound by any other court. Some other courts worth mentioning, and which I've already touched on, are the European Court of Human Rights and the Judicial Committee of the Privy Council. The European Court of Human Rights deals with applications alleging that a state is in breach of the European Convention on Human Rights. Although courts in England and Wales are not strictly obligated to follow their decisions, the courts of England and Wales must take into account the European Court on Human Rights decisions as set out in Section 2 of the Human Rights Act 1998. The decisions are therefore highly persuasive and courts often follow them. Likewise, the court itself doesn't bind itself, but very rarely departs from any decisions. And what about the Judicial Committee of the Privy Council? This is the court of final appeal for the UK overseas territories and crown dependencies, and for some Commonwealth countries, for example, the Bahamas and Jamaica. These courts do not set binding precedent for any court, but their decisions are extremely persuasive authority. There are other persuasive authorities, including judicial decisions from other countries and books such as Coke's Institutes of the Laws of England. Let's look now at the options available to judges when they are faced with a precedent. The approach taken depends on whether the court wants to follow the precedent, avoid the precedent, or completely remove the effect of the precedent. Let's look at the ways. First, we'll look at the ways which uphold a precedent. So firstly, there is the option to follow. This means that the court makes a decision in accordance with the precedent set at the same or higher level. Whilst the Supreme Court can choose really whether to follow a precedent or not, following a precedent is often the only option available to the lower courts. Secondly, the court can affirm a decision which is not actually binding on them. Perhaps it is a decision made by a lower court or court of the same level, and this affirmation, this agreement with the decision, may then result in a binding precedent. Now, let's look at ways to avoid precedent. Firstly, the court can depart from precedent. This means they do not follow the precedent which was set by the court of the same level. However, this is very limited. For example, the Supreme Court will only depart where it considers it right to do so, and the Court of Appeal may only depart from decisions when it comes within one of the allowed exceptions. Secondly, a court can overrule a decision. This option is only available to a superior court in the hierarchy, and it means that they can decide that a previous decision made in a different case at the same or lower level was incorrect. By doing this, they create a new precedent, and the earlier decision is regarded as never having been law because it was incorrect. Thirdly, we have the option to reverse. This is when a superior court in the hierarchy overturns or makes an opposite decision to the decision made by a lower court in the same case. Fourthly, we have quashing. This means when a superior court removes the decision of a lower court and orders a retrial, because the original decision should never have been made. For example, perhaps false evidence was provided and relied on in a criminal trial, or a specific procedure was not followed correctly. Fifthly, we have the option to distinguish. This is available to judges at all levels. Here, judges avoid binding precedent through reasoning that the current case before them is materially different, either on facts or a point of law, to the case which set the precedent. And finally, we have legislation. Of course, this is a little bit different to the previous ones that we've just looked at. Here, Parliament can legislate to avoid a problematic precedent set by the courts. This can, of course, be done at any time, but of course, it's relevant to court decisions because it can be done in emergency situations where legislation is required very quickly to reverse a court decision and where the legislation is pushed through Parliament very quickly. Great, so now that brings us to the end of the episode. This episode contained lots of new legal English vocabulary, which is covered in the podcast pro material. So if you're a member, you can find that at studylegalenglish.com/episode32. And if you're not a member, you can find out about membership at studylegalenglish.com/podcast-pro. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to send in your questions about equity to info@studylegalenglish.com and I'll try to answer them in the next episode. So thanks for listening and see you next time.